Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today we have with us in studio Anthony Ferguson. Anthony is a native of London, England, and is classically trained and has appeared in numerous productions in London, off-Broadway, and regional theater. Both in England and America, he is an Earphone award-winning audiobook narrator and was recommended by the All About Romance website as one of the best male narrators at performing female characters. He works widely in all areas of the voice acting world and currently lives in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for joining us today, Anthony.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, I love it. I could just sit here and listen to your voice all day.
That's very nice. I hope lots of people think the same thing.
Yeah, so it's such an interesting job to get, is to be classically trained in London and to be a voiceover actor and theater actor. Tell our listeners a little bit about how you came into this career.
Well, voiceover in general is just one of the weapons a lot of actors have in their armory, really. I've always been, I say, primarily a theater actor. But it's just an extension of that, voiceover in the sense of commercials and that type of thing. The audiobook narration I didn't get into until I moved to Los Angeles a few years ago. And I was looking into a way of expanding my work, the various ways to make more money, of course. And I saw a workshop for audiobooks. And I thought, hey, that sounds kind of fun. I'll read a book and get paid for it. I like the sound of that. And I went to the workshop, and I met a guy called Bob Deanne, who owns Deanne Audio here in the Valley. And we did the workshop, and he liked what I did, and he auditioned me and asked me to do a book, and then it just took off from there. And I really, really liked it.
That's incredible. And do you think it was just serendipity that you happened to meet this gentleman at this class, or was it something that you showed up there, you were intentional about it? How did that all come to fruition?
Ooh, a bit of both, I think. I went there and I was kind of determined to do a good job because he was teaching the class. And
oh, wow.
Also I knew he was hiring people for the job. So I thought, I want to make sure I impress this guy. But we really hit it off straight away. And he liked England. He had a sort of, he liked everything I liked. And we just really hit it off. And he was very easy with his direction. And I think it was serendipitous in that way as well.
So for those of our listeners out there who might not be familiar with the audiobook world, is it like being an actor where people give you direction?
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. No, it absolutely is. People use the word voice over a lot for most things, but it really should be voice acting, especially with the audiobooks, because you're playing multiple characters in multiple situations. Very often, like I was recording a book this morning, I was playing four different women, about a dozen different guys, with all kinds of accents from all over the place. And you're playing real characters, in a sense, to make them believable and real to the listener. And also you're trying to tell a story in a convincing way. You're a storyteller, so it's very much voice acting.
Wow. It's so funny, too, because from a career standpoint, we're all telling a story in some way or another, and we take for granted the way that we use our words and our communication. And I think that somebody like you, it's a form of artistry where you're learning how to manipulate your voice to create these different characters and moods.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a very important thing. You have to be adaptable and you have to have a flexible voice. A lot of people think it's just reading a book, like any type of voice. Oh, you're just being yourself. You're just reading. Well, you're really not, because you're playing, as I said earlier, multiple characters. And you're telling a story and you're trying to make it interesting and you're acting the story out with your voice as you go along. Because nothing's more boring than someone just going, blah, 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 blah. That's not a story. That's not exciting. And why would I want to buy that? Why would I want to listen to that on my drive to work in the morning? So it's very much voice acting. It's key. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, oh, anyone can do that. Well, anyone can't do that. You have to have a natural affinity for it.
It's funny, as we're talking about this, I hadn't thought of this prior to the show, but recently I had a job seeker who was up for a position. And she went in, and she's lovely, has a great background on paper, just the right sort of jobs and the right degrees, but there's something missing in her communication.
Okay.
Where it's that certain je ne sais quoi, that certain something. Is that something that you think the average person could learn, or is it something that you're just naturally gifted with, like you are?
I think a bit of both. I think most people have that quality within them, but it's often deep down inside them. So if you got, like, I trained as an actor for 3 years, so I had 3 years worth of training to bring that out. And I think it does require training and practice in order to be an actor, or to have that personality, or to be a larger-than-life person, perhaps, shall we say. I think most people have it, but it requires training to bring it out.
Yeah, I think that even for myself, I remember people sometimes don't believe me, but I'm an introvert by nature. My favorite thing to do is to, I know, it's very hard.
I wouldn't believe it.
Very hard to believe, but I think I learned that in life, in order to get forward, you have to speak up, and you have to speak eloquently, and sometimes with a little flair and pizzazz.
Right, yeah.
And so how did you progress in your career? Were you just naturally drawn to acting? Were there any obstacles along the way?
I never wanted to be anything else. I remember as a really little kid walking to school, and this is kind of embarrassing, saying, I really want to be as good an actor as Laurence Olivier.
Wow.
I remember thinking the exact moment walking along on my way to school thinking that. I've always wanted to be an actor. I love acting. I love telling a story. I love presenting a story. So that's something I've always wanted to do, and I've been pretty fortunate. I've never really had to do anything else. And there's lots of hiccups on the way. I mean, it's a difficult job. There's millions of people doing it. Hundreds of thousands of people want to be actors. And the trick is to kind of stay in the game for as long as possible. Most people say, I want to be a big star. They don't really want to be an actor. They want to be a big star, and they want to make a lot of money. And half of 1% of the people are going to do that. So you have to really want to be an actor. And then you're going to have to deal with it. I mean, there's an awful lot of rejection. You're going to hear no an awful lot more than you hear yes. Not everyone's strong enough to take no. They only want to be accepted all the time. So that's really the big obstacle, the ability to keep going and to just really want to do it that badly. Because there are too many distractions. You can fall to the wayside if you're not making enough money. Maybe your partner at home says, oh, God, why are you doing this job? If you really want it, you've got to stick in with it.
Wow. So do you remember what it was like for you when you went for your first audition?
Absolutely. I was terrified. I can remember exactly. It was a Shakespearean audition, and it was a theater in the West End of London. And it was a Shakespearean part, so I learned this hugely dramatic, loud volume piece of Shakespeare because I thought we were going to audition on the stage because I was an idiot. I get there. We were auditioning in the theater bar, which is, we're in a very small room right now. It was about a third the size of this room. And I had the two people sitting in front of me, and I launched into my huge piece of Shakespeare, and their hair was kind of blowing back with the volume of my voice. And I thought, you absolute idiot. I felt so embarrassed. And at the end, they said the usual, well, thank you very much. Thank you for coming in. And I walked out, and I was so angry with myself because I didn't know what to expect. And I never forget that moment. So now I always prepare properly. I find out where I'm going, who I'm going to see, what's required. Because, I'm feeling embarrassed right now.
Thinking,
how dare you make me bring that up?
You're blushing,
yeah,
Anthony.
I was such a fool. It was really funny. It was like a Seinfeld sketch. It's two people sitting there with this shocked look on their face. I was really loud. And
Did you get the part?
Absolutely not. I knew I didn't get the part because I deafened one of them, I'm sure. They needed medical attention.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
So that was my first audition. And, thanks for bringing that back.
Thanks for the memory.
Years trying to forget that.
There's a lot of good personal development people I can refer you to pluck that memory. Well, apparently, despite that, maybe that's what drove you, is sometimes I feel like we make our biggest failure and we fall flat on our face. And then that kind of drives us to, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to do that again.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. So that certainly was the case with me. I said, now that I learned to be prepared, because I just went along and thought, hey, I'm fantastic. These people are going to love me. No, they didn't. So, yeah.
I love the aspect of being prepared because it ties in whether you're an actor preparing for a speech, going into an interview. Preparation is something that you can't be successful without.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I don't think I've ever met somebody who has reached a sustainable level of success, with the exception of the people who from time to time might have a bit of luck here or there. But the people who have sustainable success typically are the ones who prepare, they anticipate, they learn from their mistakes, they self-correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so your next audition, did you get that part or did it take another
100? I don't remember the next one. I did quite a few before I got my first job, but I don't remember when I got my next one.
And did your parents support you when you wanted to
Absolutely
proceed?
Not.
Oh.
They thought I was so idiot. They wanted me to be a teacher or something like that. They really did not want to be an actor.
So how did you, because for me, I loved acting. When I was a little girl, I loved acting. I was passionate about it. I did it in high school and college. And my parents kept saying, well, you got to go get that bachelor's degree and be a business Barbie and be successful. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes wonder, oh, what would have happened if I had pursued it? But you hear these stories of people so often who aren't supported by their parents or, you know, who are told to go a different route.
Right.
How did you persist in the face of your parents saying?
Well, I think I must be bloody-minded. My dad was Australian, and they're very bloody-minded people, and I think I have that. So the more they said no, the more I thought, well, I'm going to absolutely do this. I really want to do it. I didn't really need their support. I was never one of those kids who needed his hand held and, oh, good job, you know, everything I did. That's not me. I've always thought, I'm going to do this. I want to do this. I'm going to make this happen. So I didn't. The parental support really didn't matter too much to me.
I wonder what has us as human beings, where to somebody like me it mattered so much that I was like, okay, my parents are right, I should mm-hmm. absolutely go get the bachelor's degree and go that direction. And for somebody like you who says, screw them, I'm bloody-minded, I'm going to do what I darn well please, I wonder what if that has an impact on kind of what direction we take our careers.
I think that's a good point. I think one thing it does prove is that you're doing it for you.
Mm.
You know, I think sometimes if you're doing things just for your parents' approval, pardon me, do you really want that for yourself, or do you really want it for them? If you're doing what they want, when are you going to do what you want? You know, we only live once, as that horrible saying goes. So, I think it's important to do what you want to do in life. So many people say, oh, I'll just do so-and-so for the paycheck, or I'll do it to put myself through college, and they end up being stuck with it forever and hating what they do. Life is way too short for that.
Yeah, and I think that it's never too late to redirect yourself. I remember when I was working on my first book, I interviewed Chase Jarvis, who's a world-famous photographer, and we were at Sundance, and I started asking Chase about his career, and his parents, said they wanted him to be a soccer player. And by God, he went out there, and he got all sorts of scholarships and went to college, and, you know, he decided that wasn't for him. So then midway through college, he switched, and his mm-hmm. parents said, okay, we'll go be a doctor. And then he decided, okay, I'll go make my parents proud now. I'll go be a doctor. And after he was finished with all the prerequisites, either in medical school or getting ready to attend medical school, he had to have a come to Jesus with himself and say, this is not where my heart is.
Right.
And he said, I'm really passionate about photography. And he did a complete 180 and became one of the most famous photographers in the world. And I think the moral of that story is that it doesn't matter where you're at in your career, whether you're 5 years, 5 months, or 50 years into it, you can always make that transition.
Absolutely.
And that per Chase's story, that if you're passionate about something, I think it shows up in whatever you do, right?
Oh, absolutely. It has to. I mean, you have to. I think doing something for a living that you don't love has got to be the worst possible experience, because there's no joy. There's no satisfaction. You don't feel good about what you've done. I think you have to love what you do. That's key. To anything, but certainly for work. I mean, people say, oh, it's just a job. But it's a job where you're going to spend at least 40 hours of your life every week doing it.
Or longer, if you're in law firms.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's absolutely crucial to love what you do. And the hard part is finding that. I've been very lucky because I've always wanted to do what I do. I've never thought about doing anything else. But it's really, really, really important to find that job.
And so for you personally, when somebody tells you no, do you then have to kind of brush yourself off, go through any mental exercises in order to prepare yourself for the next no?
Maybe I should. No. Maybe I just got an ego the size of a small planet. But, but no, I don't take it personally. Because for example, if I audition for a movie or a TV show and they say no, they're not saying no because I'm no good. They're saying no, I don't fit the puzzle they're trying to put together of the casting. I might look like the director's ex-husband, or he might not like English people. It could be a whole host of things. But it's not saying no to me as a person, to me as an actor. It's saying no to me as the character in this production. So I don't feel the need to brush myself off. Well, maybe, you know, I just don't, because I just don't take it personally. I think the people who do take it personally have a very short lifespan in performing arts, because you're going to hear no an awful lot more than you hear yes.
Yeah, and I think I would go so far as to say, not just in performing arts, but if you take it personally when you go into an interview somebody turns you down, taking anything personally is going to hinder you. There was a great book. Did you ever read it called The Four Agreements?
No, I haven't.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book. I think it's Don Miguel Ruiz is the author, and he talks about one of the agreements of the Four Agreements is not to take anything personally, but here's the one that I know I personally struggle with. Not to take you suck personally, but also not to take Anthony, you are the best actor ever come across, is not taking either side of it personally, because one is just as dangerous as the other.
I couldn't agree with you more. You have to know who you are. You have to be confident with who you are. Very often praise is worse than the negative side, because if you start to believe the praise, you just get such an inflated sense of your own importance. I mean, how many movie stars or people that we know have listened to how great they are, and they end up self-destructing? So you have to know who you are and be confident with who you are. And say that's any business, too. If you go for a job interview at a bank, if they say no, they're not saying no, and we hate you, and you'll never work again in the rest of your life. They're saying no, not right now, because you don't fit what we have in mind. So then you go on to the next one.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you raise, is when that other side of it, the ego, comes into play, it can be just as dangerous as hearing the no, you suck, because then you become overinflated, and you hear it so often in the Hollywood world of this superstar, that superstar, actor, athlete, etc., where they let it go to their head and then they lose that business. It's just like anything else. I think the same thing can happen in the business world as well, where you get, say, a rainmaking attorney or a very powerful CEO, and he or she could very easily wind up terminated or hurting the company because of the energy that they're bringing to that company.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. It's just ego is, if you can take ego out of most things, I think life is a lot easier.
So tell me, how did you wind up being the voice of the BBC? I know that you've often narrated a lot of work for the BBC.
Oh, I've narrated a few books for the BBC. I would love to be the voice for the BBC.
Oh,
I wish I were. But
well, I'm putting it out there for you,
yeah,
BBC,
please,
if
BBC,
you're listening.
Hiring. You're listening to the BBC. No, I would love to do that, but I've done the BBC. The BBC collection have a lot of, you know, audio books in their thing. So I've done a few books for them. I've done some books. Hamish Macbeth. There's a series of books which is, he plays this policeman who lives in the north of Scotland. He's a very lazy, kind of crazy guy. I've done a few of those, and I did Little Dorrit and Charles Dickens and a few things like that.
Oh, how fun.
But I would love to be the voice of the BBC. That would be great.
So question, would you ever turn down money or an assignment if it didn't resonate with what you were committed to with your career? Is there any audiobook or audio gig, I don't know, that you might take that would hurt your career?
I've never had that with audiobooks, but I've certainly had that with plays and things like that, where I don't think... I'll normally give something a few... It's going to sound very arrogant, and I really don't mean it to. I'll normally give something like two or three rehearsals a chance. And if it doesn't look like it's going to be a particularly good production, if I'm not working with people I personally don't feel are particularly good, or if I don't think it's going to go anywhere, I will absolutely drop out of that, because there's nothing worse than being seen in something bad.
Really?
Because people don't say, oh, I remember Anthony Ferguson, he was good in that bad play. They'll just go, oh, he was in that terrible play. And then by inference, you were terrible in it, and it doesn't do you any good at all. I've done it probably four or five times, dropped out of things.
It's funny you say that. I remember I was at a speaking engagement about a month or two ago, and there was this woman who was talking to these students about their futures and their careers, and how important it is that you do your due diligence before you ever take that job, take that play, whatever it might be. And there was one particular firm where if anybody had Googled this particular attorney, they would have seen that he had all these, write-ups on his background on the Bar Association.
Oh, really?
But because anybody who worked for that firm, they couldn't list the firm. If they did list it, then you're part of this firm where the guy was corrupt, went to jail. And then, like, in that same case, your background becomes tarnished. So you have to be very cognizant of what companies and who you affiliate your brand with.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's very important, because reputation is everything in any business. If you develop a reputation of working for bad companies or working for bad people or being in bad plays or movies, you get associated with the word bad, I think. I could be completely wrong, but that's how I've always thought. So I've always tried to associate myself with good things, good people, good productions, good attitudes, good everything, because it's kind of a slippery slope to get into the bad side of things. Because some people say, oh, you know, could have just kept going, it may have been okay, but maybe it will get even worse than I thought it was going to be. And you can't come back from that. You can't get that reputation back again. It's, oh, he's in that terrible play. Why did he do that? What's he thinking? And then people start to wonder what you're thinking.
It's a judgment call, and it's funny, we see that on the job hunting side. Sometimes somebody might leave three jobs in 5 years, and the reason they leave the job each time was, oh, it wasn't the right environment. Oh, this person wasn't, was a screamer. And the question then becomes in the employer's mind, well, why didn't you do your due diligence after time one, two, or three?
Exactly. Maybe it's you who's the problem, not the screamer or the, you know, and that's the thing. You get that reputation. Why does he keep dropping out of things? Why does she keep quitting after 9 months and moving on to the next job? So I think you have to have that. You used that wonderful word brand. I love the word brand. So you have that brand in mind. What brand do you want to have? Do you want to be the reliable guy who does good things? Or the guy who scattergun approaches everything and gives it a shot, doesn't like it, moves on to the next, moves on to the next, moves on to the next? And I personally don't want to be that guy.
Wow. And so with communication, what are some communication techniques that you personally utilize in order to have your communication land both personally and professionally the way that you want?
I think I might need an example for that, because I'm not absolutely sure I know what you mean.
So when you're talking, say that either maybe you're going in for an audition, or it could be in a personal setting, and you have a point that you want to get across.
Okay, I get you. I think eye contact is really important. Mm. I think as an actor on stage in movies, and also in interviews in the situation, eye contact. If people don't look me in the eye when I speak to them, it makes me feel uncomfortable. It feels like then they're hiding something from me. They don't want to connect with me. So I always I think eye contact is very important. I think modulating your voice. So you don't want to be too loud. You don't want to be too soft. You want to sound strong. You want to sound like you mean what you say and you're trying to communicate what you say. Mm. So I think that's important too. That's probably, and not making big gestures. So many people talk so much with their hands, and I don't get it because it just doesn't make sense. But maybe that's just me. I don't use my hands too much when I talk either.
I think that is a great point. I remember one of the first on-camera coaches I had would show me what I looked like on camera.
Like a whirlwind.
And my hands were all in front of my face. Mm-hmm. And like you just said, it's distracting. And if somebody, even if they're making great eye contact and making great points, if your hands are doing something, or believe it or not, I've also noticed that too exaggerated of facial expressions can also be very distracting. There was a gentleman once who I coached who was an executive and brilliant guy, had already sold his own company and was going in for a director level job. And by God, every time he made a point, he raised his eyebrows. I can't even do it. And it was, he didn't even know he did it. And then once I told him about it and he started to work on it, he's like, oh my gosh, Jen, you're absolutely right. I do raise my eyebrows every time I do that.
Because you start to wait for the next time they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then you stop listening to what they're going to say. Is he going to raise his eyebrows? He's raised his eyebrows. When's he going to do it next? And I know exactly what you mean. It's really distracting when people do that.
We all have things. And women, I've noticed, I would love to have a body language expert on the show one of these
days.
Ooh,
that'd be fascinating.
Yeah, one of my friends, Nina Irani, who works with politicians and very high-profile people, I intend to have her on the show at some point. But women in particular will do a head tilt. And so have you ever noticed that?
I have noticed that.
Like I'm doing it right now inadvertently.
The head tilt and the bob of the head.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's a very passive, submissive thing. And it can come across very negatively, I'm sure, in an audition or in an interview, because it doesn't come across as strong and confident like a perpendicular head to your body does.
No, that's very true. And it's the passive-aggressive part is true, I suppose. And it shows a lack of confidence. And that's my understanding of job interviews are through auditions.
Yeah.
But a regular job interview is exactly the same. And I've done thousands of auditions over the years. So every audition is a job interview in and of itself. So you're right. You have to present that strong. You don't mean like aggressive or overly or pushy, but you have to be strong in who you are. And the body language is very important. As we said, don't use your hands too much. Don't tip your head to one side. Yeah, it's very interesting stuff. A body language expert would be fascinating to listen to.
I know. It's my intention. We'll have to get Nina on the show early next year. And so are there any other tricks that you have in your belt of what's had you be such a successful voiceover actor that's made your career thrive compared to some people who might have given up and failed?
Okay. I think one thing is I've been trained as an actor and I've been trained to use my voice. A lot of people think, as we said earlier, it's an easy job. Someone has, you've been told at a party, oh, you've got a really good voice. You should do voiceover work. But it's so much harder than that. It's a much, much harder thing than you think. And the people who don't have the training, particularly the technical training of using their voice, fall by the wayside because they get sore throats and they get nodes on their vocal cords. They get vocal cord hemorrhages because they can't use their voice properly. So you have a very limited lifespan. Which I do a lot of teaching voiceover work and teaching stuff for audiobooks. And so I always stress that it's not the reading of the story that's important, it's how you produce your voice is important. So you need to have the stamina. You have to build that stamina up. Because I can speak, and I often do, for 8-9 hours at a time without a break.
Wow.
But I've really practiced that. If you try to do that without any practice at all, you're going to have really sore throat. You're going to sound like that the next day, and then you can't record. Your voice will sound different than the day before, so the audio engineer will say, well, I can't use this because you sound like an entirely different person than you did yesterday. So you have to be able to get that consistency.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of... Is there a special pill that voiceover actors take, that slippery elm bark?
Oh, slippery elm. I got some in my studio at home.
That's
I like that.
Yeah. I had an actor who worked with me years ago who was my assistant, and I was getting ready to give a speech. And sure enough, I was one of those people where I'd been speaking a lot and my voice started to tickle and I lost my voice. And by God, that slippery elm bark, for anybody out there going to an interview, how is it you all know about that?
It's good stuff. I don't know. I had a friend of mine who was an opera singer years ago, and she turned me onto that. And it really does work. It just coats the throat. It makes everything nice and smooth. It stops, I hate to be like gross about it, but you get phlegm build up in your throat because your vocal cords are trying to protect themselves by producing the mucus.
Oh.
And you need to get rid of that. So the slippery elm works. And also, if you drink a little apple cider vinegar, it cuts the flu, the mucus, and takes it away.
Really?
It's a bit, makes you cough, but because it's quite strong. But that works pretty well, too.
Oh, my gosh.
So if your voice gets tired, you start to sound like that. Little apple cider vinegar. Oh, you're back.
Good to know. I know, because that's the worst thing. Say you get that important audition or that important interview, and then the last thing you want to do is cancel or try to reschedule because you might lose it.
Yeah, the thing is with what I do with the longer type stuff, with the audiobooks, it's having that consistent sound because I don't do it a book in a day. It will take me maybe 2 weeks. So I need to sound exactly the same on the first day as on the last day. And I need that consistency. So because I know how to use my voice properly, and I do voice exercises every day myself before I record to strengthen my voice, etc. Because I know how to do that, I know I'm going to sound the same, and it won't cause the technical people, the directors and things, problems because I sound different. And I can get through it without suddenly, I can't speak today, I need a day off. You don't want that.
I think it's funny because if you try to cheat the system, like you say at anything, I think that there are some people out there who might have a lucky opportunity that is presented to them. But it's like anything, if you don't work at it, if you're not diligent in learning your craft, whatever your craft might be, there's always going to be hindrances. And it's the thing that's going to have you have the staying power in any career is working and honing that craft. And
absolutely.
In your case, it's the vocal craft.
Absolutely, because that's my medium. That's what I have to do. I mean, for this type of thing, people can't see you, so they have to be able to hear you well. And you have to be able to control your voice. It's kind of weird, because it is just reading. It is just speaking. But it's speaking for hours upon hours at a time. And so you have to know how to control it. Control your breathing. Control the way you sit. Control the way you place your voice in your mouth.
Your voice in your mouth?
Well, most people just kind of swallow their voice. It sounds like this, and it has that resonation. You should really place the voice so it bounces off the area just behind the teeth, and then it brings in all the resonating cavities in your head, and so you have that resonation, so your voice carries. Otherwise, it's a really thin sound. If I try and place it at the back of my throat like this, it's really thin. But if I place it normally, it sounds a little more round and more what's the word? Resonant. That's what I used the word.
Resonant.
More resonant, yeah.
Who knew? I'm learning
so
many things.
There we are. No charge for that. You can use that.
And this is actually going to tie in perfectly to our guest next week, Arthur Joseph, who also is not a voiceover actor or a vocal actor, but does teach those sorts of things as well. And so that's great. So you teach people how to be effective at doing these audiobooks then?
Absolutely. I teach people. If people just want, because I do a lot of voiceover work for commercials and things as well, and have done over the years. So people who want to get into the voiceover business, I do a lot of teaching for people, teaching them how to use their voice, as we're saying, the technical aspect, and also how to deliver the dialogue, deliver the copy, as they call it. Because when you're doing commercials, you're a salesman, so you have to hit the right things. There's the hot words, you need to make sure you hit the name of the product. So many people audition for Joe Blow soap, and they go really soft on Joe Blow soap, but they'll say something else. And it's like, no, they're paying you a lot of money to sell the Joe Blow soap. So, you need to know how to do that. So you need to, this is structuring the way you deliver it.
And enunciating, too, I think.
Absolutely. You want to be clear. You've got to have energy because you're selling. You don't want to be like the car salesman when you're talking like this. But you want to have that little bit more energy than normal so people who are listening on the radio go, oh, okay. It wakes them up and they start to listen.
That's so fascinating. And so how do you reinvent your career constantly? For somebody like yourself, where you were trained in the theater company in London and you've now gotten into voiceover and acting, were there any times where you wanted to give up? How do you keep digging in and finding these new ways, like creating these seminars, for example?
I've never, ever wanted to give up. I mean, when I was a little kid, one of my heroes was Winston Churchill. And someone asked him, not before he died, what was his three most important things in life that you need to remember? And he said, never give up, never give up, never give up. And it stuck with me. And I thought, yeah. I found what I like to do. I don't want to do anything else. And so I just kept going. Sometimes it's been a bit tough, but life's tough. I mean, anything worthwhile is hard. If it was easy, anyone would do it. So I liked, I just keep going. And as far as, you just have to go with the change of the market. For many, many years, I didn't do the audiobook stuff because it was in its infancy. I just did commercials, and I did pretty well from that. And then I realized over the years, they're using more movie stars for things like that because people recognize their voices, and it helps to sell the product. So I thought, where should I go now? Then back to the seminar with Bob Dayan, the audiobook guy, I thought, this could be the new thing. And that was about 6 or 7 years ago. And now audiobooks are just huge. I think they're outselling paper books, someone told me once.
No, tell me it's not true.
It's like the biggest area in publishing is the production of audiobooks now. All the big publishing houses produce audiobooks of all their big books.
So do you have an agent for audiobooks then?
Not for books. I just do that for myself. For my regular commercials and things, I have an agent, but not for audiobooks.
Oh, who knew? See, it's so funny. You would think you have an agent for everything. So.
Yeah, I don't know why, actually. It's kind of strange. You tend to just approach the publishing houses yourself. Maybe that's changed, but I personally don't have an agent for that.
So he is available for any agents out there who might be, or to anybody who has a book.
I'm available for anything.
For anything. Well, you might have a kids' party on Saturday.
I'm not wearing a clown suit, but I'll do most things. No, but I like the teaching thing. Teaching is a lot of fun, too.
And how do you do seminars, one-on-one coaching? How did you get into that?
Mostly one-on-one stuff. People have said to me, hey, I really like what you do. They'll contact me on Facebook or something, say they like listening to my work. How did you get into the business? And I say, so we had the conversation we had earlier about, you really need to be trained and things like that. And they say, would you be interested in, teaching me? I say, absolutely.
That's amazing that you just naturally segued and it kind of became part and parcel to your brand then.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to teach. I think it's fun. It's good to help people to achieve their dreams and to do what they want to do. But I'm a tough teacher. You have to do your homework and stuff like that.
Can I ask you a difficult question?
Anything.
Does it ever occur to you that you might be teaching somebody who could be your competition?
No, because there's only one person in the world who sounds like me.
That's
me. And that's the wonderful thing about the voiceover business is people are either buying the way you sound or they're not buying the way you sound. So it's very liberating in that sense because you go in and you do your thing, you follow your brand. And if someone says, hey, I like that Anthony Ferguson's brand, I'm going to use that to sell my soap. Or they say, no, I didn't really like him. I like that other guy. And so it doesn't worry me at all. There's room for everybody because there's only one me. There's only one you.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant, too, because when people ask me about competition, like, for example, in the recruiting world, to me, there's no competition. We all have our own expression
Absolutely.
Of how we do it, and I find that I think it's great, and the reason you're probably successful is that you pay it forward. I've mentored so many people in the recruiting world, taught people how to open their own recruiting companies because I feel like it's a gift that I get to do it every day, probably like you feel. It's a gift to get to do your voiceover work every day.
Absolutely. And it's very important, as you say, to pay it forward is a very good expression. You should help each other. Everyone should help each other. And I think it's quite sad if someone feels that they can't help someone achieve their dreams because it may impinge on their own. I think it's a very negative way to see things.
What I've noticed actually for myself in business is that the more you give away, whether it's money, time, things to help pay it forward, with other individuals or organizations, the more it comes back to you tenfold.
Absolutely. I've always found that too. That's why I love to help people out.
Yeah. And it's even you just being here, it's so great because it's a win-win. All the listeners out there, somebody might be able to use you for an upcoming commercial, book, theater opportunity, but it's also a win for the listeners because there's so much that you've been able to impart with us about your story and your journey. And I think it will come back to you tenfold because when you put good out there, you will be shocked and amazed. But when you hold on to something so tightly, like it's mine and I'm not willing to share it, it will shrivel up and die in your claws.
You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank
I want to make sure all of our listeners out there, whether they want to work with you one-on-one or might want to hire you for a future audiobook or commercial or theater engagement, where can people find you and utilize you?
They can just find me. They can email me. My name, AnthonyFerguson@gmail.com. I have my website, AnthonyFerguson.com. just contact me that way, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone about any potential teaching prospects or projects in general.
Awesome. And again, it's Antony, A-N-T-O-N-Y, right?
That's correct.
Perfect. I know the accent, sometimes people might mistakenly think it's Anthony.
I get that all the time. I have to keep crossing off the H in my name, but that's, yeah.
Perfect. Well, it's been such a joy to have you in studio with us today. And do tune in next week as Arthur Joseph, founder of Vocal Awareness, joins us on the show to talk about elaborating on what Antony and I just discussed. How can you really utilize your voice so that it has the greatest impact for what you're committed to? We always invite you as well to find us on Facebook at Get Yourself the Job on Facebook. You're welcome to leave us any comments or interactions there about our guests. Or on iTunes, you can rate us or leave a comment if you have any feedback for us under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And as always, all shows are available for download immediately following the show on the LA Talk Radio Archive or on iTunes later in the week. So thank you so much for tuning in, and have a wonderful week, everyone. Thanks, Antony.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.